Hey, Steve, it's James West. How are you?
Good. How are you doing?
I'm doing well. Thanks for joining me today on the podcast series.
Oh, thanks for having me.
So this is the Invest with James West podcast series, and in addition to the numerous private companies we've had before, we're very excited about this one. This is a very unique company, as this company is in the business of helping the oil and gas industry achieve its environmental gains at scale. So for those who don't know, Kairos Aerospace, provides transformative technology that gives the oil and gas industry the power to achieve its safety and environmental goals at the lowest possible cost. Specifically, the company uses aerial surveys to detect methane leaks. Steve is a PhD physicist who co-founded Kairos Aerospace in 2014. Prior to founding Kairos, Steve was a research manager at the Lockheed Martin Solar and Astrophysics Laboratory. He has worked on a variety of NASA and DARPA-funded programs, including cryogenic detector programs, solar physics experiments, and radiation modeling for spacecraft. Steve received his PhD in physics from the University of Wisconsin at Madison. So Steve, again, welcome.
Thanks.
So let's delve into the business. What was your vision for starting Kairos Aerospace, and how did your background in solar physics influence the decision?
Well, my partner Brian Jones and I were both physicists working at the Lockheed Martin Advanced Technology Center, and we were doing a lot of work with satellites and satellite data, working on sensors for all kinds of interesting projects. And we sort of realized that a lot of what we were doing could be used for sort of commercial purposes, and that the main block for using aerospace technology to generate useful data for companies was the part about going out and flying airplanes or satellites and getting that data. And if we did that part for people and delivered the data, that might be a really interesting business that could generate a lot of value for a lot of people. And so we decided to go out and pursue that.
And then how did you choose oil and gas?
Well, we looked at a lot of different industries and a lot of different problems, and our basic idea was find a problem that we thought we could help with in a really significant way. And we went through a whole bunch of crazy ideas, but when we had our first conversations with people in the oil and gas industry, we really rapidly settled on a really significant problem that people were starting to have in around 2015, which was companies being very, very worried about natural gas leaks. They were trying to figure out ways to reduce their natural gas, which is mostly methane, so to reduce their methane emissions. And the technology that had existed up till then wasn't really up to the task and would cost a huge amount of money. We realized that we probably had something to offer there that might help people quite a bit. And so we decided to pursue that and pretty quickly found out that we were right.
Well, good to hear. So you mentioned finding the largest leaks to have the biggest impact. So where do these large leaks typically occur in the oil and gas business?
Right, and this was sort of, I think, the key insight when we began was rather than taking the old path of trying to find the tiniest leaks with the most sensitive instruments, we sort of followed our satellite background and went for a mission-based approach, which was, okay, you want to reduce the amount of gas that you're leaking. What are the requirements to do that? What are the things that are causing the biggest amount? And we really quickly realized that this was what I guess people in the business world call an 80-20 problem, that 80% of the effects were coming from 20% of the sources. And with that in mind, we started chasing those really big emitters. Once we got out there, we found, not to anybody's great surprise, that the biggest culprits are usually where you have the most gas coming out of solution with the oil, and that means the tank batteries. Especially in the Permian Basin, a lot of the oil production produces a lot of gas, and when the wells come together, the oil comes out into the tank batteries. That's a place where the gas comes out. And if something goes wrong there, that means there's going to be a lot of gas escaping. So that's, I think, one of the biggest culprits. But we also found a bunch of things that were pretty interesting that I think people didn't quite understand, which one was that gathering lines are a significant source of emissions. A lot of these gathering lines, we're talking about small lines, they're pretty old, and a lot of is being demanded of them at this point, and so they tend to leak, and we were actually able to figure that out really quickly, and so now we're starting to expand into the midstream space as well.
Oh, very interesting. So if we think about 2019, how much methane did Kairos detect? And how, if we translate that and put on our ESG hats here, how does that translate into carbon metrics?
Yeah, so 2019 was the year, I guess, we really went big. We surveyed all of the New Mexico Permian and a large chunk of the Midland Basin, and we started getting, we had about a dozen customers. And our customers found and fixed over 3.9 billion cubic feet of methane. In other words, they stopped that much from getting into the air.
Right.
That winds up being about 2 million tons of CO2 equivalent. And to put that into other terms, that's kind of like shutting down a 1.1 gigawatt coal-fired power plant.
Right.
But my favorite way of looking at this is that this is sort of like taking a bunch of cars off the road in 2019.
Right.
And I think it translates into around 425,000 cars that we took off the road. I like that metric the best because I compare it to Tesla, where they made about 367,000 cars in 2019. So looking at it that way, in 2019, we reduced greenhouse gas emissions more than Tesla did.
That's very, very impressive. And your valuation just went up significantly.
I hope so.
So how is the overall ESG push influencing your business?
It was the big surprise for us in 2019. It really has been significant. Up until then, we're sort of used to how our sales conversations would go. We typically spend a fair amount of time talking with a customer before they, you know, sign on. And we talk about what's important to them and performance and value. And we try to pitch ourselves as like this, you know, economically useful thing for people that they recover quite a lot of gas. And so the value is worth it. But people would also talk about all sorts of things like regulations. But then in 2019, all of the conversations changed, and it really is almost the beginning and the end of most of our discussions with oil and gas operators
right.
These days, ESG issue, which fortunately we're really well positioned to help with. We have the ability now and are doing this. We are flying over large scales, so all of the New Mexico Permian last year. This year it's going to be the entire Permian, the Eagle Ford, the DJ Basin, and within the next couple of years, hopefully all the basins in the U.S. And in those basins, we'll be able to measure the methane leak rates of pretty much every operator. And so this gives people a very, you know, accurate measurement, not an estimate, which is what
sure.
people have done up until now, but a measurement of exactly what their emissions are, where they come from, and how they can fix them. And so this sets people up to be able to respond really well to ESG questions.
No doubt
about
that.
Companies now go and give like this really clear, like, this is what we have, this is how much we've improved it, and here's exactly what we're doing to improve it next year. And that simplicity really helps when you're talking to ESG folks.
Yeah, no doubt about that. Could you also discuss your relationship with Pioneer Natural Resources, you know, how you're helping them accomplish their environmental goals?
Sure, and I'll start off by saying that we hold our clients' privacy very close. It's very important to us that we're a trusted partner. And so we don't discuss results from any clients at all. But what I'll do is say they have been a longstanding customer of ours. We're in their third year of operations of doing all of their assets. We've learned quite a lot from them. They have been, especially over the last couple of years, a real leader in sort of reducing flaring and venting in the Permian.
Right.
Their CEO, Scott Sheffield, he's taken a very firm stance on this. And as a result, I think Pioneer is sort of at the head of their pack on these issues. They've got a very sophisticated sort of multi-pronged, multi-level emission reduction program, and we're a part of it.
Right.
We're just one part of it. And we're very proud to be part of that program because it's really quite good. In the beginning, they put us through this incredibly rigorous series of tests, which was frightening at first, but it turns out we learned a lot from that.
Sure.
And they were the first company that deployed us on all of their assets. And so we've learned quite a lot. And again, I'm not going to discuss any of the details of their operations, would point you towards their 2019 sustainability report, where they discussed our work with them. They were able to reduce their emissions as we were part of their effort that led to them reducing their emissions by, I think it was 40%
wow.
in 2019. And they specifically cited us as saving them during that time over 2,500 employee work hours and
wow.
over 1,000 hours of driving time.
Wow.
And especially that driving time, I think is one of the places where we really help. The, you know, oil fields are huge, and instead of driving trucks around or even driving trucks with little drones around to everywhere, we can scan the whole thing, find your biggest problems, and then reducing that driving time reduces accidents and reduces costs. So
sure.
That's, I think, an important part of what we offer to our customers.
So is that really the traditional way that companies, you know, have been discovering methane leaks? And then if so, how does your aerial methane imaging process work and kind of displace that?
Yeah, it is. So up until really the last 5 or 6 years, almost all of methane leak detection was about safety. This emphasis on ESG, this emphasis on emissions is very recent. And so for decades, the reason you would look for a gas leak is it's a very good reason, is the fear of fire or explosion. And so all of the technology and all of the methods and procedures were all around the idea of checking for leaks in people's homes or in places of work, places where there's lots of people. And in those cases, the technology they developed, which is quite good at it, all revolved around finding very small leaks and measuring parts per million in an atmosphere. Because that's what matters. When you reach a certain parts per million, then you can have combustion, and that's bad.
Sure.
This change in emphasis, though, on, hey, what we really want to know is in our entire, you know, value chain, all the way from the well to your house, where are we losing the most gas, brings you out into the oil field, and those little sensitive sniffer devices are no good in that environment. That they
right.
are very hard to use. There's wind out there. All the wells are miles and miles apart. And so it becomes extremely expensive if you're going to try and deploy those technologies in that area.
Right.
And that was the challenge. So instead, what we do is we fly over those hundreds and hundreds of square miles of territory and pick the leaks, detect the leaks that are the largest ones at the few sites where these leaks are coming from, and now somebody in a truck can go straight to that site, and either with a handheld device or a drone, they can inspect the site and find the particular, you know, hatch or valve or wherever that the problem is coming from. And this saves them a lot of effort and speeds things up quite a lot.
Interesting. So since the founding, how many miles have you guys surveyed? You know, what's the total volume of methane leaks that you've discovered? And I think you're mostly Permian, but I think you've done some other areas too. Where have you guys conducted these surveys?
Yeah, so at this point, it's kind of a challenge to keep track of these statistics. But our best guess at what we've flown, starting a few years ago, we started keeping track really well. So I think we're pretty accurate. We've flown the airplanes that we've hired, I should say, to fly,
sure.
have flown our sensors for over 135,000 miles.
Wow.
And that means we've covered something like 8,000 square miles of oil and gas fields. And we've done that in 8 U.S. states and in 1 Canadian province. We don't actually release total figures for methane discovered, but as I
sure.
said before, we do talk about how much we fixed. And last year, 3.9 billion cubic feet was our customers were able to fix.
Sure.
This year, we're expecting to do quite a bit more than that.
I would imagine so. So, very interesting. I did read about, and you just mentioned it earlier, that you're going to do a kind of an unprecedented survey of every production facility and pipeline across the Permian Basin. Were you chosen to conduct this survey, or are you doing it on spec, and what's the ultimate goal?
We chose ourselves.
Okay.
Yeah.
that's what I thought.
Yeah. That's our business model, is rather than sort of saying, okay, we're going to go to every single operator and individually sort of haggle to try and figure out if they're interested or what have you, we're going to just do it all. And we have the ability, the reach and the scale to do that. So we started last, in 2019, we covered all of the New Mexico Permian Basin.
Mm-hmm.
This year, we're going to just do the whole Permian. We're going to do the Eagle Ford and the DJ Basin and possibly other stuff in the U.S. We will start our first flights in North Africa this year. And within the next couple of years, we expect to be regularly surveying every basin in the U.S. and a significant amount around the world. And we're just going to do it.
Right.
And then we can gather that data at scale, and we're able to be more efficient when we operate at those large scales, and then sell the data to the various operators within those regions. So you don't have to sort of schedule with us. You don't have to decide, are we going to be flying this kind of airplane or that kind of airplane? This is just happening. We're surveying
sure.
everything. And the data is for sale. And that's a much simpler business model for us to pursue.
Well, totally understand. Have you noticed any change in behavior for those after which companies have used your service? Have they been more proactive in doing more surveys?
Yeah. So what I always say is that the most important survey we do for a customer is the first one.
Right.
It's very hard to know where gas is leaking all over the oil field. And pretty much all of our customers, when we finally do survey everything, and I'm not just talking about a little proof of concept of a few hundred or a thousand wells, I mean,
sure.
all of their assets in a basin, pretty much every single customer we have learns something they didn't know about where they're really losing their
right.
gas. And once they know these things, they act on them very quickly. And so, you know, of course, when they learn new things, they change their actions. Of course they do. And that's sort of been the really fun part is in the last year or so, we've really been able to watch that happen. We have a pretty good relationship with our customers and a feedback loop of understanding
sure.
what they've done and what they've found. And the lessons that they learn are really interesting. In a significant chunk of the Permian, one of the major culprits of emissions is not broken things. It's not valves being busted or a seal, you know, corroding or something. A pretty substantial fraction of the problems were tanks that were attached to gas gathering lines that were overpressured.
Right.
There's nothing wrong with those tanks. There's nothing wrong with their various bits. It's just that the line has high pressure, and under those conditions, the safety relief valves of the tanks do their job, and they release the gas. And when you can, as a company, look and say, look, every tank battery we have attached to this one line has got a problem, now you know a pretty significant way that you can reduce your emissions, which is talk with your midstream company, the operator of that line, and renegotiate the capacity. You don't have to fix a thing,
mm-hmm.
but in changing that contract or in maybe working with a new supplier, you can reduce your emissions. And in some areas, that was the dominant source of emissions, and
wow.
they were able to make significant reductions just by those kind of things.
That's very interesting. Two more for me before we jump into the technology itself.
Okay.
You know, given the history of wells that you guys have scanned, do you know what percentage of wells have leaks versus wells just not leaking at all?
So one of the things we're really trying hard to do is be part of a movement away from estimations and into measurements.
Right.
And so I won't say what fraction of wells in, say, the Bakken or in Alberta or wherever, I won't say what fraction of those are leaking because we haven't surveyed all of those.
Sure. Oh, fair enough.
But in the Permian Basin, we have surveyed such a large chunk of it that I feel pretty good saying that roughly 3% of sites will have what we would call a major emission source. And we're able to find those pretty quickly. It, when you think about that, there's probably a lot of tiny leaks that are all over every site.
Sure.
But these major ones, we're talking about really big leaks, hundreds of thousands of cubic feet a day, and by tracking down those like 3% and fixing them, you can make a massive change in the total amount of methane you're emitting.
And how quickly are repairs usually done to the leaks that you guys discover?
That varies a lot. A surprisingly large number of them are very easy to fix. You hear people talk a lot about, oh, someone left a hatch open, and that does happen. We've definitely seen those. And that, it takes a minute to fix it. You close the
sure.
hatch, you're done. A number of other things are similarly easy. They're some kind of operational thing that has gone wrong. Something has been set to the wrong setting, and in those cases, again, it's very fast. Sometimes it's as simple as replacing a seal. Sometimes it can be quite complicated, and you have to shut down a system to replace it. That can take days. And in the case of things where it's a problem with your midstream supplier with the gathering lines, that can take quite a while to adjust that problem. But we typically find that after the first survey and repairs, really within a very small amount of time, people have reduced their emissions by 30 to 45%.
Wow, that's amazing. So let's get into the technology. How does the leak surveyor work?
Well, there's some, you know, secret stuff that we've patented that I'm not going to tell you about.
But of course.
What we have is a pod that is a mapping engine. And inside of it, we have GPS sensors and attitude sensors. We have some proprietary software running. And then in the pod, you can put almost any sensor you want. We have our proprietary methane spectrometer in there. We always also have an optical camera. And that pod then, as it flies along, the methane spectrometer images methane on the ground. The optical camera is taking pictures so you can see exactly what's happening there. And then the pod as a whole is essentially recording all the information necessary to turn that into a map that you can then give the results to your customers. Huh. And we don't own any airplanes. So what we do is these pods are relatively small. We ship them where they're needed. And mm-hmm. we rent Cessnas locally and fly those. And it turns out you can rent Cessnas really almost anywhere people are producing oil. And this allows us to be really flexible and keep our costs down. And that's really it. We're looking, I guess the most technical thing I'll say is we're looking at the reflected sunlight. So as the sunlight bounces off the ground and comes back up through the methane, very specific wavelengths of that sunlight are absorbed by the methane. This is what makes methane a greenhouse gas, but it's also what makes it possible for us to find it.
Right. Okay. Okay. I still find it a bit hard to believe that you can fly at 3,000 feet and rapidly spot these locations. Is there a certain size leak that's required for the technology to detect it?
Yeah, although we're improving that all the time. And again, we're looking for the big ones. We're not going to find the little tiny leaks. So we can see leaks down to around 10 MCF a day, depending on the wind. And so usually what we shoot for is to have a sort of 100% detection rate of things that are 40 MCF a day or higher. And it turns out, at least in the Permian, that leaks that size are at least 80% of the gas that's escaping. And so that means we're getting by far the majority of the emissions.
Sure. Okay. That makes a lot of sense. So outside of methane leak detection, is your technology used for other applications?
Oh, yeah. I mentioned that these pods are mapping engines, and we can put whatever sensor we want to in them. We have already put thermal infrared sensors in them, and we fly around the oil fields in Southern California that use steam injection. And those operators can have problems with steam leaks that can be quite hazardous.
Okay.
And so we regularly fly, I think we fly every quarter, a pretty significant chunk of the steam injection operations around Bakersfield. We've been doing that for about 5 years. It's a smaller market than the methane market, but it's pretty consistent.
Mm-hmm.
We've also used our thermal sensors to look at the sort of remains of forest fires to find smoldering areas that can be put out by, follow-up crews. We have looked into a number of other uses that we might put this to, but right now we're really focused on the oil and gas sector and specifically looking for methane emissions.
Right. Okay. So what's the timeline for an operator to receive the results from the survey? And do the customers, they provide you with any data outside of where their infrastructure is located, or do you completely handle the data collection process?
They tell us where their assets are, but that's really about it.
Okay.
Everything else, that's just us. We turn data around pretty quickly, and really the main question about this is sort of the repair and inspection regime that the companies do, and we try to integrate into that. So it takes about 5 to 8 hours to process the data from the time it's taken to the time we have some results.
Right.
So typically what that means is the airplane's going to fly, and the next morning we're going to have most of the raw results. Now, as a practical question, when are you going to send somebody in a truck out into the middle of the field to look at something and fix it? Turns out to be the dominant delay in this whole equation.
Okay.
Because we're going to find a lot of things, and people are going to prioritize them and go out to fix them. So what winds up happening typically is we deliver a report on some cadence, typically once a week, once every 2 weeks, and show them everything we found in the preceding week or so. And then they go out and look at them. And when we deliver the next report, they give us feedback at the same time. We do have an API so that their software can plug into our data and just pull it as fast as they want. And some of our customers are starting to do that, but it really turns out that we are part of their process. And their process, the biggest delay, right, we're talking about assets that are out in the middle of nowhere.
Sure.
Biggest delay is like, okay, we need to schedule when a truck's going to be able to go out there and have a look at this thing. There is a big exception to all of this, and that's safety concerns. When we are analyzing the data and we see a significant gas leak that is anywhere near occupied structures like houses or places of business, we pick up the phone and call immediately, right? I think just like our customers, everybody sees those as high priority and we want to jump on those immediately.
Right, right. And so how are you analyzing this data that you capture, and how do you interface that data with your customers?
Well, that's why we're in Silicon Valley. Really, this is a data company, and we're very proud of our sensors, and we're very happy at the way we're able to deploy them.
Sure.
At the end of the day, if all we had was a thing that could detect methane, then that would mean somebody would have to look at that data for every single site and make decisions about every single site, and that would be very time-consuming and expensive.
Right.
So we, of course, have automated this, and we have a very powerful cloud data processing pipeline. And as the data gets uploaded from the field, it automatically gets processed. The physics calculations behind the spectrometer get done. The georeferencing gets done. The images get put together and turned into a map. The leaks get found. False positives get eliminated. Any test that we want gets applied to these things. And then at the end of that, the leaks are identified, they're associated with a particular piece of infrastructure, and then and only then does a human run through the data and say, okay, here's 10 leaks, and the computer is saying it's associated with that well, does that look right, and then we sort of do quality checks. And we've managed to reduce that time by a factor of 10 in the last year, and that's why at this point we're able to cover huge areas and thousands of wells a day. We're flying literally two airplanes every single day, as long as the weather's good, two airplanes every single day over the Permian Basin. And starting in a few weeks, that's going to be three airplanes, and then it's going to be four or five within a few months, and continuing to grow from there. And so that means a gigantic amount of data that we're processing and trying to turn around and succeeding in turning around in pretty much real time.
That's very impressive. So kind of a personal question for me, why Cessnas and not drones?
Why is that a personal question?
Well, I think drones are cool.
So I think drones are cool, too, and we actually have, from time to time, had drone races around our office. But at the end of the day, this is a business, and it's all about costs. From our point of view, we really don't care what we fly our pods on. Drones would be fine. You could fly them on carrier pigeons if carrier pigeons made sense. But it really is, to us, just a question of how expensive is it to cover a square mile. And drones are cool, and probably within the next 5 years, they will be the solution. And when they're ready, we'll start using them. But today, in just sheer dollars per square mile, the most efficient way to do this is to rent Cessnas. They are all over the place. They're pretty cheap. And the thing about drones people forget, well, there's two things they forget. Number one is that they run on batteries, and they have about a half an hour, 45-minute lifetime. So that really limits you, and we're trying to cover 150 square miles a day. But the second thing that people forget is that with drones, you still need a pilot, and that's where a lot of the expense is.
So
when drones become automated and are legal to be automated and fly over thousands of square miles of Texas, then we'll start using them. But until then, the cheapest way to go is with a Cessna. They're incredibly reliable. They've been around forever. And so it was a no-brainer, really.
Okay. Makes sense. Well, maybe a couple parting questions for me before I let you go. How, as investors or industry observers, will we know that you're executing on your milestones? And what are the key milestones for this year and next year?
Well, obviously revenue, but we're a private company, so we don't report that.
Sure.
But our main job is to help companies reduce their emissions. And so last year, we reduced 3.9 billion cubic feet. If we succeed in 2020, we will hopefully help our customers get rid of 10 billion cubic feet. And that would be a milestone I'd look for. And then the year after that, I would hope to hit 50.
Wow. Okay. Ambition. I like it. So what's something that investors or market observers don't realize about Kairos Aerospace?
Scale. It really is all about scale for us and has been since the beginning. We are going to be covering everything. We're already covering a huge fraction of the oil production in the U.S. because we're covering a huge fraction of the Permian. Starting this year, our surveys are going to mean that every operator in the Permian Basin, the Eagle Ford, and the DJ Basin will be able to have an accurate measurement of all of their major emissions not an estimate, a measurement.
Right.
And that includes where those emissions are. So every single operator in those basins could know where they are. The question that faces them isn't whether to go out and measure how they should measure. It's just, do you want to know where they are? Because Kairos already knows, and we can tell you.
That's great. Well, this has been very fascinating, Steve. Thanks for joining me today. Always good to catch up, and we'll be in touch soon.
All right. Thank you very much.
Thanks.